DW Africa Link.
Hello everyone out there and a warm welcome to Africa Link, broadcasting live from our studios in Bonn. My name is Assumpta Latus.
And I am Jen Nyinge. Remember, this broadcast is also streaming live on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and also on our partner stations across the continent.
Coming up, Senegalese President Macky Sall has been sworn in for a second term. Where does this leave the opposition?
The opposition has widely boycotted the swearing-in ceremony this morning. Macky Sall invited the opposition party leaders and former prime ministers, but some said outright that they wouldn't be attending, and others claimed that they hadn't received their invitation.
And South Africa's president's son, Andile Ramaphosa, is on the spot for allegedly being involved in a corrupt business deal. But what's his dad's position?
If it turns out that there is any illegality and corruption, even if it means that I'm the one who will take him to the police station, that I will be able to do.
Yes, that is only a few from stories line up for you, but first, news in brief.
DW News.
I'm Kai Dambach with the DW News. Senegal's President Macky Sall was sworn in for his second term on Tuesday. Sall has served as Senegal's president since April 2012 and received 58% of the vote in the first round of elections in February, which secured his second term. The European Union's negotiator for Brexit, Michel Barnier, said that UK lawmakers are running out of time for an orderly departure from the European Union. Barnier said that if Theresa May's deal, which has been rejected three times now, is rejected again, the choices that remain are simple.
If the UK Parliament does not vote in favour of the withdrawal agreement in the coming days, only two options would remain: leaving without an agreement or requesting a longer extension of the Article 50 period. It would be the responsibility of the UK government to choose between these two options.
The UK is currently due to leave the EU on April 12. Germany has taken over the presidency of the UN Security Council. German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas accepted the position, which was previously held by France. Maas said it was an important signal that the two countries were working together. Germany was last president of the council in 2012. This news comes to you from Deutsche Welle, Germany's international public broadcaster. The United Nations said Tuesday that more than 113 million people suffered from acute hunger due to wars and climate disasters last year. Africa was the worst hit continent, with the Democratic Republic of Congo, Ethiopia, and Nigeria ranked among the countries in most need of food assistance. The figure of 113 million people facing food crises is down almost 10% from 2017, but the number of countries affected by food crises has increased. A German satirist is taking Chancellor Angela Merkel to court over her response to his 2016 poem about Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. The poem caused a rift between Germany and Turkey. Jan Böhmermann said his poem was intended to show the difference between legitimate criticism and insults. Merkel's official response was that the poem was offensive, although she later said that response was a mistake. And in sports news, German Soccer Association President Reinhard Grindel has resigned following discontent with his leadership and allegations about not being open about outside earnings.
Am Ende frage ich mich, warum ist das passiert?
In the end, I ask myself, why did this happen? I can only explain it by saying that I was deeply convinced that I was doing nothing wrong and that I had simply not questioned enough in the stress of the office. Once again, the fact that I am standing here in public because of such an event makes me bewildered and sad, and I simply ask for a fair assessment of my term in office, which unfortunately ends with only 3 years.
Meiner am Ende dann leider nur dreijährige Amtszeit.
The two first vice presidents of the association will take over on an interim basis until a new president is elected in September. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Kai Dambach.
Welcome back to the show, and we are live from Bonn, Germany. My name is Assumpta Latus.
And I am Jen Nyinge. Thank you so much to all of you listening to us live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Like Abane Ibi, and you say thanks, DW, for keeping us informed on what's happening in the continent. Thank you so much, and we really appreciate your company. We start off the program in Senegal, where African leaders have today joined thousands of Senegalese for the swearing-in of President Macky Sall for a second term in office. Sall emerged winner of elections held on February 24th, defeating four challengers with 58% of votes cast.
His successful re-election campaign was based on his emerging Senegal infrastructure project to spur economic growth. The opposition candidates have, however, rejected the results, saying they were not going to challenge it in court, however. To know more about the ceremony, I talked to our correspondent in Dakar, Emmanuel Lende.
Macky Sall arrived this morning at around 10:50 at the conference centre in Diamna Dio, which is located about 40 kilometres outside of Dakar for the presidential swearing-in ceremony. Now, in 2012, he was sworn in Dakar, but this year, his choice to be sworn in Diamna Dio is certainly symbolic. It's a modern city which was planned by the president to help take the pressure off the historic capital as part of his Senegal emerging plan. The ceremony started at about 11:40 and in a packed auditorium with heads of state and government delegations from around 15 African countries were there, as well as international government delegations.
Looks like that Macky Sall has a backing of many leaders and people from inside and outside the country. But the opposition candidates rejected the results, saying also they're not going to challenge it in court. Where does this leave the opposition anyway?
Yes, exactly. Well, the opposition has widely boycotted the swearing-in ceremony this morning. Macky Sall invited the opposition party leaders and former prime ministers, but some said outright that they wouldn't be attending, and others claimed that they hadn't received their invitations. That was according to the local press. Idrissa Seck, who's a former prime minister and came in second in the election, he had 21% of the votes, was also invited but failed to show up. Former president and secretary of the Democratic Party, Abdoulaye Wade, was also apparently invited, but we haven't heard a peep from him in the lead-up to the ceremony at all. And as you mentioned, altogether, the four opposition candidates, so Idrissa Seck, Ousmane Sonko, Issa Sall and Madi Kenyong, they've all rejected the results. They said a court challenge would be futile.
What do people say about this inauguration then?
So Macky Sall has portrayed himself as a moderniser who's helped to boost economic growth to more than 6% a year, one of the highest rates in Africa. And this is widely shared in the press. And people here do tend to follow and repeat what they see in the media. So whenever you ask anyone about Macky Sall, they say, you know, he's a worker, he's a builder, and he's really built up Senegal. The Senegalese population follows politics closely. It's fascinating, but it's also entertaining. People really are looking to him to boost job creation and improve living conditions in Senegal. They're really just waiting for the emergence of Senegal that they've been promised for several years.
I was speaking to Emmanuel Lande. Now, we posted this story on our Facebook page and some of you have been commenting on it. We said, what message do you have for Sall as he begins his last term? Any wise, you're saying you love Senegalese people and you would wish him to shun corruption.
We have this one from Betty Langasi. She says, I wish him a good luck, but I know little about Senegal. So keep talking to us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Now, from this week on, Germany holds the month-long rotating presidency of the United Nations Security Council. During his first speech in New York, German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas set out Germany's priorities.
Among those priorities is the launch of an initiative called Humanitarian Call for Action, an initiative aiming at providing answers to pressing questions. Anne Huhn has more details.
For the first time in 7 years, a German foreign minister chairs the most important body of the United Nations. During his first speech in front of the other members, Heiko Maas identified what Germany considers to be the most pressing questions.
Where and how should we ensure that the protection of aid workers and those receiving assistance? Where do we need training and instructions in international humanitarian law? And how can we better support compliance with international humanitarian law in conflict regions?
He added that Germany would also work for better protection for women in armed conflicts and a stronger role for women in conflict resolution. Germany has been a member of the most important UN body since the beginning of the year and is one of the 10 non-permanent members. It will chair the Security Council meetings until the end of April. Germany took over this role from the permanent member France. The governments in Berlin and Paris had agreed to regard their successive terms of office as a joint dual presidency for 2 months.
Anna Hoon with that report. Let's move now to South Africa. With just over a month to go before elections in South Africa, President Cyril Ramaphosa is facing corruption allegations.
His son, Andile, is also alleged to have had shady dealings with company that is said to have spent millions of dollars in bribes in order to get government contracts. Tuzo Kumalo with the details from Johannesburg.
First, it was former President Zuma and his son Duduzane in the spotlight over corruption allegations involving the rich Gupta family. Now it's the turn of his successor Cyril Ramaphosa and his son Andile to face demands to explain their relationship with controversial service and facility management company Posasa. President Ramaphosa allegedly received over 30,000 euros from Posasa. According to presidential spokesperson Kusela Diko, this money, which was paid in 2017 into a trust account of law firm Eldenstein, Fabler, Kropler, was for Ramaphosa's presidential campaign. Posasa had made a donation just like many other supporters. Nevertheless, Diko said Ramaphosa will pay back the money.
As you know, the leader of the opposition would have gone to the public protector to say that she believes that perhaps the president would have violated the executive ethics code or anything that needs to be investigated in that regard. So it has been put in that trust account until those issues have been sorted and finalized, and it will be returned.
The State Capture Commission has also heard how President Ramaphosa's son, Andile, was paid over 120,000 euros by Posasa. Andile, a businessman and owner of a consultancy company, has produced a contract showing this payment was for advisory work his company did for Posasa-linked projects in Kenya and Uganda. He vows he has never used his influence to help Posasa get government contracts.
We want to see these matters concluded. We want accusations to be investigated, and if investigations prove people are found to have been corrupt or bribed or what have you, we want people to be prosecuted.
His father, President Ramaphosa, has also emphasized this point.
If it turns out that there is any illegality and corruption in the way that he has dealt with this matter, even if it means that I'm the one who will take him to the police station, that I will be able to do.
The leader of the opposition Democratic Alliance Party, Musi Maimane, says President Ramaphosa should take steps to clear his name at the State Capture Commission. Nkandla was Zuma's luxury home where costly building improvements were financed largely by taxpayers' money. The inquiry into corruption allegations against Zuma and his son Duduzane are continuing.
Tuzo Kumalo there with that report from Johannesburg. And we've gotten a lot of comments on this. Hilary John says the worst thing that will happen to South Africa citizens is voting to elect Ramaphosa as the new president of South Africa. It will be like hell.
Well, and Sophie Classico is saying, after supervising his first xenophobic attacks on other Africans in South Africa, he has now joined the ranks of the rest of the other African violent crocodiles in the name of leaders in devouring the continent of its wealth and people. A pity and a shame. That's your comment, Sophie Classico. Well, and you, Hassan Mohamed Yafi, you're saying Malema can carry Madiba's legacy because he is a true fighter for the black South Africans and Africans in general. Do you agree with that, Jen?
An interesting comment there, but keep those comments flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Masumta Latus.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. This broadcast is also streaming live on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and our partner radio stations across the continent. And already on our Facebook Live, I can see Monju Erineos. He says, hi, thanks so much for the greetings, Monju. And we also have Ibrima Fadia. Thank you so much for keeping us company. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, 1 year since Abiy Ahmed was sworn in as Ethiopia's prime minister, how has his government fared so far?
There has been lots of changes, you know, including the peace process between Ethiopia and Eritrea.
So far, they are on the right path, and it's not an easy business because the more they are trying to improve things, the more there are opposition.
Also coming up, a group of young Ghanaians start translating Wikipedia pages into Ghana's most spoken local language, Akan or Twi. But first to Ethiopia. Today marks exactly 1 year since Abiy Ahmed was sworn in as Ethiopia's prime minister. Abiy came to power at a time when the country was under a state of emergency that followed a year-long crackdown on opposition political activity.
Thousands of activists had been detained and hundreds had died in demonstrations crushed by the government forces. Despite the prime minister introducing a whole host of reforms, the anniversary has drawn a mixture of praise and criticism. With more, here is Susan Holton.
The ascendance to power of a young reformist leader delivering a message of unity, prosperity, justice and peace gave Ethiopians from all walks of life a new feeling of optimism. During his inaugural speech on April the 2nd last year, Abiy acknowledged some of Ethiopia's enduring problems. He apologised for the deaths of protesters at demonstrations, welcomed differences of opinion, and promised to heal the wounds between Ethiopia's ethnic groups. Kirtil Chonfol, a professor of peace and conflict studies at Bjørknes University College in Oslo, says despite the prime minister making progress on many fronts, some deeply rooted challenges, such as ethnic tensions and the internal displacement of people, remain.
I'm not blaming the prime minister directly on the surfacing or igniting these conflicts, but it is a matter of fact they are there and they're making life unbearable for many and an increased level of both individual and collective insecurity is felt in many parts of Ethiopia today. That is his biggest failure, not to address that more concertedly.
Against the background of inter-ethnic conflict, displacement and instability, the government has indefinitely postponed a census planned for this month. This received mixed reactions. Merera Gudina, chairman of the multi-ethnic opposition party MIDREC and a professor of political science and international relations at Addis Ababa University, says the postponement will have a major impact on the upcoming election in May 2020 and could even call it into question.
I'm against this postponement. I think what we should do is to resolve our standing issues. Postponement is not a solution.
Abiy's administration has been criticised for not reacting quickly enough to the inter-ethnic conflict that has displaced about 3 million people. However, journalist Samuel Getacho in Addis Ababa says he's surprised by the amount of change the prime minister has brought.
There has been lots of changes, you know, including the peace process between Ethiopia and Eritrea, and hundreds and hundreds of people that I have known throughout my life fighting for human rights and democracy and so on, have returned to Ethiopia.
The government of the 42-year-old leader has released tens of thousands of political prisoners, rewritten repressive laws, and made peace with previously banned opposition groups. Abiy has also increased the number of women in his cabinet, acknowledged previous administration's widespread use of torture, and taken steps to improve the independence of key institutions. Many residents in Addis Ababa believe that the Abiy government is on the right path.
Ethiopia is under reforms in law and some other regulations.
So far they are on the right path and it's not an easy business because the more they are trying to improve things, the more there are opposition sides, you know. So we are expecting difficult situation, but I'm still optimistic that they are on the right track.
Some Ethiopians there just telling us what they think 1 year since Abiy Ahmed was sworn in as Ethiopia's prime minister. And that report was by Susan Holton. You can get more of that on our website, dw.com/Africa.
Africa on the move.
Now, language is an essential aspect of human existence and communication, but with the emergence of digital platforms, not all languages get the needed recognition and acceptance. That means people who speak those languages can't find information online.
Now, in Ghana, a group of young people with funding from Wikimedia is training young people to translate Wikipedia articles and pages into the local Ghanaian language called Akan or Twi. Isaac Kaleji in Accra has more on this initiative.
In this presentation, we'll be looking at a background to Wikipedia, how to get started on Wikipedia.
Over 20 young Ghanaians gather in a room in the capital Accra to learn how to translate articles on Wikipedia into their local Ghanaian language called Akan. Akan, also known by some as Twi, is spoken by over 50% of the population, but materials in the language are limited online. This session is first of many being put up by a group called Global Open Initiative Foundation. The project is being funded by Wikimedia Foundation with support from Pan-African digital news media company Africa Fits Media. These young translators are guided to create Wikipedia accounts and then pick articles to translate into Twi. Lead coordinator for the session, Zita Esla Zagi, tells us why this initiative is important.
We want to do this as a way of preserving our indigenous languages and as a way of encouraging Ghanaians to take pride in speaking and writing in our local languages.
The Akan or Twi is not only spoken in Ghana. In neighboring Ivory Coast, 30% of the population speaks it. Zage says that makes the ambition to get millions of Wikipedia pages in Akan a worthy cause. She says there is a plan to have similar projects on other local languages soon. The young people volunteering to undertake this translation project consider it an honor, projecting their Ghanaian language.
Our language is part of our culture, and we can never do away with our language. That is why I'm part of this session.
When I saw the call that they wanted to translate most articles into Twi, with one of the basic reasons that very little articles were actually written in our local language, I would say that it was a great opportunity to be able to tell the stories our own way and also in our own languages.
There are other sessions planned for this and next month, but the challenge is the lack of enough editors or people volunteering to translate. Zage says despite all the challenges, the ultimate aim is to protect the Ghanaian cultural heritage and allow people proficient in the Ghanaian local languages to access materials online.
At the end of this project, we are hoping that a community would evolve, which is the Twi Wikipedia community. So it shouldn't end here.
Idioma is technology.
Some words don't have one.
Accessing information on digital platforms is becoming the norm these days, and many people unable to speak, read or write in some international recognized languages seem to have been left behind. But for those speaking the Akan language, their hope of playing in the digital space may just have been given a perpetual flame with this project.
Isaac Kalechi in Accra, Ghana. Assumpta, such a great initiative there.
I always like, you know, good stories and good initiatives. Bring them on. Bring them on.
Focus Europe.
Italy's populist government has introduced some tough immigration laws since coming to power about a year ago. Interior Minister Matteo Salvini has led a campaign to stop NGO migrant ships from using Italian ports that led to a sharp decline in migrants being trafficked across the Mediterranean Sea.
The party Salvini leads, the far-right League, has promised to deport hundreds of thousands of irregular migrants. And here is the plot twist. The senator responsible for the League's immigration policy is himself an immigrant. He was born in Nigeria, that is Africa, and is Italy's first black senator. Yes, an immigrant is shaping the party's anti-immigrant policies. Angelo Van Schaik met up with him at the Italian Senate in Rome.
Bene, bene. Grazie. Grazie, Presidente.
This is Tony Iwobi, Italy's first senator with an African background. He came to Italy in 1976, studied the language, met his wife, and ended up in Spiro, a small town in the north of the country, a region not known for its openness towards strangers.
I must admit, in the beginning, I didn't feel at ease. I spoke the language badly, didn't have any friends, and didn't know anyone who looked like me or had the same skin color as me. So I felt a bit lost.
Despite the tough start, Iwobi settled in and went on to become a successful entrepreneur in the IT sector. Nessun Dorma, the unofficial party song of the right-wing Lega Nord, or Northern League. Iwobi joined the party back in 1992. Even though the League has become associated with populism and nationalist policies, Iwobi says he was attracted by its federalist ideals. The League advocates greater regional autonomy, politically and economically. Its power base is in the north of Italy. Iwobi describes the party's rhetoric against outsiders, namely southerners and immigrants, as folklore.
That's not the League I know.
Today, Tony Iwobi is a senator and responsible for the League's immigration policy.
The League is the only political party with a clear immigration policy based on 3 points. One, we want legal and regulated immigration. Two, people who are fleeing from conflict areas should, without a doubt, be given shelter. Three, we are against illegal immigration.
Just a few kilometers from Iwobi's office in the Senate is Tiburtina, Rome's second largest railway station. There are dozens of immigrants waiting for volunteers from the Baobab Refugee Center, which helps organize food and shelter for immigrants. The number of immigrants arriving in Italy by boat has decreased because of hardline policies introduced by the government. But Andrea Costa, who works for Baobab, says government policies are boosting the number of illegal people here. For example, a new law that came into effect in December abolished 2-year residency permits on humanitarian grounds.
Many people were given residency permits for humanitarian reasons and then lost the right to stay. And there are young immigrants who were in regular refugee centres and then thrown out of them the day they turned 18. Italy creates its own illegal residents.
The mayors of a number of large cities have also spoken out against the tough new laws. But back at the Senate, Nigerian-born Tony Iwobi doesn't accept their protests.
And where were these mayors earlier? When uncontrolled immigration created social unrest? When big money was made exploiting immigrants? Or when thousands of immigrants were left to their fate?
There are tens of thousands of immigrants in Italy. And perhaps ironically, Senator Tony Iwobi, who came here from Nigeria more than 40 years ago, could play an important role in deciding their fate.
Angelo Van Schaik with that story from Rome. And that's what we had time for. Join us tomorrow again for more stories from the continent. I'm Assumpta Latos.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. Thank you so much for your time.
DW. Made for Minds.